role of the regional advisory committees, and we'll turn time over to you.
Absolutely. Thank you. I know most everybody in the room, and I think most everybody knows who I am. I appreciate being here. I think SB 198, for those of you who are not familiar with it, that was the legislation that was passed last year that really fundamentally altered the Utah Communications Authority in a number of ways. The first thing that it did is it altered the composition of our board. Okay, our board went from a 27-member board down to a 9-member board. The composition of that board is three individuals that are appointed by the governor, one by the Speaker of the House, one by the President of the Senate, and then one from UAC and one from the League of Cities and Towns to get to your 9, okay? That's where we're at. The old 911 committee went away. That was dissolved. And in its place, we've now got an operation advisory committee that's composed of a lot of the same people that used to be on the board, a representative from the chiefs of police and the fire chiefs and the sheriff's association, representatives from all a variety of other groups. That group is there to do a lot of advising, a lot of advice to the UCA. And we're hopeful. That group has not met yet, so you guys are a little bit, you guys are probably to be commended, because I think this is the first regional advisory group that's met that we're aware of. At no point are we going to try to dictate anything to you. That's important that you understand that. What I think the intent of SB 198 was is to get you folks together to provide our board and directly to UCA staff anything, any concerns, anything that you would like to add to what we're doing. I mean, any issues at all, bring those to us. And again, I'm more than happy to come and speak to you when I'm invited, but again, we're not going to try to set any agendas or do anything like that. That's not what it's about. It's about trying to help you guys, trying to assist us and make sure that we aren't getting lost in the minutiae and that we aren't doing things that we shouldn't be doing. That's how that's how SB 198 really saw this. We're still comprised. Let me talk about how UCA is broken down. First of all, we're in our new digs just right here. I literally walked over here. Our new building is within walking distance of this one. We're just right over there on the fifth floor. If you head east on Wiley Post Way, literally we're the first building that you come to, the first 5-story building on the right-hand side, on the south side of the road. That's us. Our board still meets every single month. In fact, our next board meeting is February the 14th, coming up, just around the corner now. We still have our divisional makeup is a little bit different. For the first time ever, realistically, we've got all the division directors under one roof, which is a huge deal for us. Now every day that we conduct business, we don't have to run around. And I mean, boy, when I first got to UCA, I was wondering how the business was conducted, because literally we had none of our division directors where they needed to be, in my opinion. We have the 911 division still. That's headed up by Melanie Crittenton. We have the interoperability division and also radio programming division that are underneath Gordy Coles. A lot of you probably recognize him and know him very well. He's been around a long, long time in the state. Then our radio division is headed up by Travis Sylvester. He's around. I've got a deputy director and legal counsel now by the name of Quinn Stevens. So the organization has changed fundamentally. I mean, when UCAN first started back in the late 90s, I think they're very entrepreneurial. They were going out and doing things that they needed to do to get the system up and running. Nowadays, we're subject to the procurement code, and we look a lot more like a regular state agency. Even though we're still an independent state agency, we probably function a lot more like an executive level state agency would function, okay, and what you would normally see. We still do have a little bit of differences, but at the end of the day, we're looking more and more like a state agency all the time. And I can tell you this, things have never been better from the standpoint we've got financial controls in place to make sure that we don't have embezzlement again. We have a CFO in place that we've never had before. The organization's never had a CFO, and we've got one today. We also have members of our board that make up a subcommittee of the board that actually looks at finances all the time. In fact, we had them up at our offices just yesterday looking at the books. So there's a lot of eyes looking at the financial house. And things truly have never been better. We've been through multiple audits in the last year. We've passed all of those. We've complied with all the terms and conditions of those audits. So we feel very strongly that we're doing what we need to be doing. There have been some changes. Some of them have been met with, you know, various degrees of acceptance. And, you know, there's going to be some of that. But we want to make sure that we're soliciting information from you, that you guys have a voice. This system that we are currently in the process of conducting, well, actually promulgating an RFP right now for the system upgrade to the P25. That's something that's been on the front burner now for a long time. We do have a committee that we have put together of a lot of different diverse folks from around the state that are going to actually help us promulgate that. We have a consultant group, Federal Consulting, that's helping us with that RFP. We actually did a symposium down in St. George. A lot of you were there. I know that because I saw some of you there. There's no question that over the course of the next 30 years that this is going to be the most important thing that happens in public safety communications in Utah, this whole upgrade. We are committed to putting together an RFP that is vendor agnostic and devoid of any proprietary information. That's been our catchphrase, and we're doing that every day. This committee that we've put together that is actually going to help us make this decision on who's going to win this thing is going to have to do some traveling. We're going to make sure that we vet these vendors very well. We're going to make sure that we go and take a look at what they're doing in other states. We haven't got to that point yet, but we know that that's coming. But we are very close to having that RFP ready to go out to the committee to have them take their first crack at it, give us information, you know, tell us what they like about it, what they don't like about it. But we're being very methodical about this. I want you to know that. We understand that the needs are different throughout the state. Here on the Wasatch Front, we are out of radio frequencies. It's one of the big reasons why we need to upgrade, because we don't have any more 800 megahertz frequencies here along the Wasatch Front, particularly in Salt Lake County. We're done. We have a very good system, but it's at end of life. It is not being supported anymore by the manufacturer. Motorola has been very good to us over the course of the last 20 years, and we've got a great system that's performing. It is, but I can tell you, it's no small feat to keep that system up. Every single day, we have about 175,000 transmissions that go across our system. It is working very well, but one of the big reasons that we're doing this upgrade is also to bring us into compliance with some federal standards. One of the great things about P25 is that it will truly enhance interoperability, not only inside the state, but also outside the state as well. The P25 suite of standards that have been assigned to public safety communications really are meant to encourage that interoperability from state to state, from agency to agency. And eventually, when the entire country is on the P25 system, you know, if we need apparatus to come up from Vegas or even Southern California, if we had a major disaster or anywhere else in the country, we would be able to talk. And it would be seamless communication. That's what it's about. And at the end of the day, that's one of the big reasons we're doing this. We know that upgrading from analog to digital will be a good thing as well. Talking about the radios that you have now, the old legacy radios that you've got now, make sure that you're doing everything that you can to upgrade those radios to a radio that's at least P25 Phase 1 compliant. The good news is if we go to Phase 2, the Phase 1 radios will work too. And we can talk about some of those nuances if you have specific questions. Happy to answer those for you. We can do that. But to give you a general brief overview, I think that's essentially where I'm at. If you have any questions, I would love to answer those or do anything that I can to try to assist this group at all.
Questions? Comments? Got another item in just a minute. the agenda that we can broaden beyond, if there's, broaden beyond what David has shared with us. You'll notice with the recording and with the noticing, meeting noticing and so forth, we're trying to be compliant with the Open and Public Meetings Act. And so I'll open it for up for public comment. Seeing nobody from the public here, I'll close the public comment. And we'll move on to item five. Given that, you know, the role of this group is to bring issues, identify issues, bring issues to the Utah Communications Authority through the Operations Advisory Committee or directly or however those communications are meant to happen, wanted to give this group the opportunity to identify or at least begin initiating some discussion on issues related to public safety communications that that you're aware of or that you think would be worthwhile bringing up and discussing and perhaps down the road bringing to the Communications Authority. With that, pause. I'm going to close this door.
Right. We can talk about this tomorrow. I think the sheriff over here had you know, an issue that I think that is one that we've been contending with for a long time statewide. We've got a lot of rural agencies in this state that are still on the VHF system, and then some of them even have VHF trunking. There's a couple of, there's at least one county that I know that does that. They're very happy with what's going on with the VHF, and they feel like that they need it for the topography of their county and feel like it's working well. That's great. UCA has spent millions of dollars upgrading that system, maintaining that system, doing all the things that we do. We're not here to shove anything down anybody's throat either. I do know that there are agencies that want to maintain that, and that's great. Along the Wasatch Front and in the Wasatch Back here in northern Utah, obviously we continue to expand the 800 megahertz system that we have. And we put up new towers all the time. We've had new counties that have come on just recently. Juab County recently just came on. We were able to erect a couple of towers in that county that lit up Nephi. The city of Nephi was having a lot of trouble with their 800 megahertz, and now that's about to change, or it's in the process. In fact, we just barely completed two towers down in Juab County to allow them to come on. Miller County wants to come on. Beaver County wants to come on. And we do have a lot of people that really want to come and be a part of this system because it's been so successful. As we continue to expand throughout the state and build more infrastructure, the radios are working very, very well, and the system is working well. But you're right, and I'm glad the sheriff brought that up. We do have a number of folks in the state, particularly on the eastern side of Utah and in the southeast corner of the state particularly, that are very happy with the VHF system. That's okay. That's fine. We're not gonna take that away. We're not gonna make anybody do anything else. But it does present a little bit of a problem from an interoperability standpoint, and that's what we tried to explain to some of these folks, is that we want to have a system where everybody can speak. We want to have a system where all police, fire, and EMS have the ability to communicate across disciplines. We have issues with the Highway Patrol and with UDOT throughout the state. They're all mostly on 800 megahertz, but also some of them have dual band radios or have a VHF radio in their vehicle. So making sure that they can still talk to those other agencies. But it's an issue, and we understand and acknowledge that. And we don't want to force anything on anybody. If it's working well, great. It's not that VHF's not a good technology. It is. It's tried and true. It's been around a long time.
Couldn't it be like made reverse compatible so it trunks through to the newer technology and you just have a like a port that would broadcast it on both spectrums?
There's a lot of patching that's going on throughout the state, okay? At the radio console, there is a lot of patching. The problem with that is some dispatchers are better at patching than others. Some forget, you know, and frankly, what happens if there's a chase or some sort of major emergency, a lot of it gets thrown out the window because everybody's just, you know, they're tunneled down and, hey, we've just got to deal with this emergency. So it's not the best case scenario, but is it doable? Yeah, it is. And it's being done right now, today. It's something that for the foreseeable future, we'll just have to contend with, and we're ready to do that. One of the things that I wanted to highlight as well is part of this RFP that we're going out for this year is radio consoles are included in that. Okay, so if you've been a UCAN user and you have radio consoles, those new upgraded P25 radio consoles are part of this. So you don't have to budget for that. We're going to be paying for those through the you know, the bond that we secure.
What about cars and headsets?
No, the end user equipment we are not providing, and that's not something that we've ever provided. I know that would be wonderful. Believe me, I get that. The radio consoles themselves, that is part of this RFP upgrade night, and I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that.
If we can back up a little bit, Dave, having been a little bit involved in the SB 198, I wonder if it'd be beneficial if we talked about what we, as a RAC Regional Advisory Committee, is what our real purpose and function is in terms of, and I was a little confused when they developed the law because I looked for, coming from a paramilitary organization, which all fire and police understand, I was looking for the organization to kind of understand the hierarchy. And the way I understand it, there's 7 regional advisory committees, all of the regional councils. So that represents the entire state. And the way I understood that was the regional advisory committees would focus on not only the radio needs of their footprint, the Wasatch Front, but also 911 related issues, because that also falls under UCA. So
that's true.
My assumption is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, if people see this differently, is our responsibility as the Wasatch Front Regional Advisory Committee to really focus in on the issues that affect our region, our issues as they relate to 911 and radio issues and interoperability. Because I also understand that the chair personnel of all those 7 RACs actually serve on the operations committee, but they're not necessarily subservient, because it also said in the statute that we, as a committee, have to meet at least a couple times a year, but we can also request to make a presentation to the actual UCA board.
Correct.
So it's not like we're secondary to the operations, but we could, if we had, say, a significant Wasatch Front Regional Council issue, we could go to the board and present our concerns of, hey, we've got problems with Salt Lake County, not enough talk groups, not enough frequencies, and these are our problems. So what I guess I'm trying to do is kind of truly understand, as a member of this committee, what kind of box can we put ourselves in terms so we're not just spending time. I get that we might be concerned with Washington County as it relates to the entire system, but that regional council should be focusing on those issues. It's not really our purview to really be concerned with, or should we? We're not really a statewide committee, we're a regional advisory committee. I'm just looking for
understanding
of what we are versus what we maybe are.
That's very well said, Chief. I'm glad you brought that up. This is a regional advisory committee that is focused on the Wasatch Front and the constituencies that you guys serve, okay? There's no doubt about it. You're not subservient to the Oak. I don't think that's the way that it's set up at all. The Oak, a lot of people have said that, well, what do these regionals do? I think so much of the agenda is driven by you folks. What do you want? And again, that's exactly who you should be worried about, is the groups that you serve. And you do have the ability to go directly to the UCA board. You do have the ability to go in there and say, hey, we've got a problem here, we've got an issue, and we want this addressed. So that's very, very well said. You don't have to go through the Oak at all. That's not what statute says. It's very loose. I think they made it ambiguous on purpose. I think there's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to what your role is. I think you guys can create that role. I think there's really a vacuum here. What do you want it to be, and what do you want it to do? There's very little direction, and I think it was given that way on purpose.
But we're at least confined within our Wasatch Front. But I it's just as much as you mentioned earlier with the sheriff saying, okay, there's parts of the state that really prefer a UFA system or a VHF system. And I understand the issues of that. As a former UCA board member, I remember hearing those discussions and those challenges and those solutions. But we do have some unique issues within this particular footprint. Many may or may not know, but Mike knows this really well. But Salt Lake City was a partner of UCA, not necessarily just a traditional member. And we have other radio systems that we refer to as subsystems, which tie into the UCA system. Well, that transition of not only financing, but responsibility of either maintenance and replacement all has to be completely understood. I'm sure it's a significant issue with Salt Lake City. And so that would be something that we, I would believe, as the Wasatch Front Regional Council would be focusing on, which really isn't maybe the Southern Utah's focus, for example.
Absolutely. You guys know that you represent about 75 to 80% of all the radios in the state right here in this room. I mean, that's what you guys represent. Salt Lake, you're right, has not been historically a member. One of the things that I didn't highlight that I neglected to, or wanted to, was that the user fees that traditionally how we serviced our operations and maintenance, those went away. Okay, SB 198 allowed us to go in and let me tell you about how the budget breaks down. There's 18 cents out of every phone line in Utah, every cell phone, every landline is assessed a tax, a total of $1.32, okay? 18 cents of that is for operations and maintenance of our radio division, okay, and really UCA. 9 cents is for the 911 division, and we have now, as of January 1st of this year, there's 34 cents that's being collected to service a bond for this radio RFP. So there's a total of 52 cents that goes to UCA, and I just gave you the breakdown, 18, 9, 34, okay? The rest of that money goes, there's 71 cents that goes directly to every public safety answering point in the state, okay? It used to be 61 cents. Now they kicked it up to 71 because they got rid of the computer-aided dispatch, that account. That used to go to UCA, that now goes directly to the PSAPs. So if you run a PSAP, you're getting 71 cents out of every line that comes through, that's assigned to you folks. There's $1.32 that's the overriding tax that every line is getting. So that's the breakdown on that, and I should have told you that. If you were paying a service fee before, which everybody was, as of July 1st of 2017, you no longer have to pay that fee. So what has been what that has prompted is a number of people to come onto our system, and that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? If they don't have to pay the radio service fee anymore, they're gonna wanna come onto our system, and we've seen that. We have talked with Salt Lake City. The chief has been in a lot of those meetings. He knows that. And, you know, Salt Lake has its concerns, and we understand that. At the end of the day, I think from an interoperability standpoint, it makes a lot of sense for them to come on. And just from a monetary, stance, it makes a lot of sense. Their folks are being taxed that money no matter what. But, you know, that's a decision that Salt Lake City is going to have to make. Does it benefit the UCA? Well, from the public safety standpoint, I think it does. But from any other standpoint, it makes more work for us. It does. But we're glad to have Salt Lake, and we'd love to have them on the system. But again, we're not pushing them to do that because, frankly, it's a lot more work for us if Salt Lake does come on. They have a lot of radios in Salt Lake City. We currently have a system that covers Salt Lake City very well today. They have a radio system too, and the two overlay one another. And we don't believe that if Salt Lake comes on that their coverage is going to go down at all. In fact, we see it staying the same or probably even getting a little bit better. That's the way we see it. But there are some unique concerns that Salt Lake has. I know Salt Lake Fire Department has some concerns regarding what's the radio coverage going to be like in their high-rise buildings. I know they're very, very concerned about that. We're trying to address some of those issues, and I think we do have answers for that, and I think we can address all of those issues. But that remains to be seen what the mayor decides she's going to do as far as Salt Lake coming onto our system. I don't know. Chief, maybe you have some insights.
I don't. I didn't know you happened to be in with Patrick Cleary, so maybe that might be the answer there tomorrow. I don't know.
Could be. Yeah. Could be.
Well, Dave, those are the same concerns we had pre-Olympics when, you know, the urban folks were concerned with building penetration, and we wanted to make sure the RFP didn't just focus on, I'll just say it, but, you know, trooper coverage, because that's out of building.
Sure.
And that you've all seen coverage maps, and, you know, out-of-building coverage is totally different than in-building coverage. And so, once again, that's a real focus of Wasatch Front, because we've got to have system design. And I think what's also important from the RFP standpoint is if it's going to include that total footprint of all the Salt Lake City's needs, and we make sure that it covers all of that, and it covers all the capacity as well as the in-building and those kinds of things that are important to us along the Wasatch Front.
We have played, even though Salt Lake City is not on our system today, Salt Lake does have a representative on the RFP selection committee. Corey Lyman is actually, he's on our selection committee. So they do have representation. We're hopeful that we can make that work. I think it makes a lot of sense. I understand why Salt Lake hasn't been on before, because I think that radio service fee for them was a lot of money. They've got a lot of radios. Salt Lake Fire, Salt Lake Police, Salt Lake, you know, Public Works, that's a lot of money, no doubt about it. But I'm hopeful that we're going to come to a mutually beneficial resolution. I believe that that's the case, but again, I can't speak for Salt Lake. Wouldn't want to.
Nor can I.
Yes, I understand.
Since you brought up fees, I was wondering if I could bring up a question about the 71 cents and just that's pretty important to the PSAPs. About 40 or 50% of our funding at the PSAPs across the state and within this region come from the 71 cent fund, which is collected from those cell phone taxes. It used to be collected, as you said, based off the number of lines that were that lived in a particular area. And they noted, of course, there were some problems with that. Some of our rural areas had a massive influx of people during the summer, but they didn't live there. Their taxes didn't go there. Salt Lake City had issues where they had a lot of people coming into the community calling 911 during the day, but it wasn't being supported by that revenue. And so a year ago, that law was changed to provide for the number of 911, the monies to be distributed by the number of 911 calls actually received by a 911 center. Which worked to address some of that imbalance or the problems. And that was kind of, as I understood it, this is a suggestion, and then there was that 2-year hold harmless put into the bill that no one was going to be adversely affected for 2 years while we look at this. Is that the best way to distribute funds? It might be, but there may be other functions of distributing that money. There may be other factors that need to be considered. We're about 1 year into that 2-year study period, and I was wondering I believe UCA is charged with analyzing that.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could provide for us an update on where we're at with that analysis, where you see going forward, who will be part of the process to participate in that discussion of trying to look at if that's the best option or if there are other factors we need to consider.
That's a great question. You know, I think, does everybody understand that, what happened on that, shifting? Trying to make sure, what we heard from a lot of our public safety answering points across the state is some people are getting $35 per 911 call, some people were getting 10, okay? So in an effort to try to regulate that and make it more, you can argue politically if that was that decision was made, and at the end of the day, right now I think people are what they're trying to get to about $21-$22, and it's right through there is what we're trying to get everybody to. There's definitely some folks that were very disadvantaged by that. You're right that UCA was tasked at looking at that. We're still in the process of trying to figure out exactly how we're going to analyze that, and we want it to be a participative process. We look at all the time. We know exactly how many 911 calls every PSAP is receiving. We have that ECATS in place, the software to know and make those determinations. we have not settled on exactly how we're going to analyze that. That's something that, that we're still looking at. The 911 division has been tasked with that, but I know that they've got a couple of ideas, but I don't think we've settled on anything that I'm aware of at this point. And we know that we've got to get to that. There is a 2-year hold harmless, and the clock is ticking on that. From a political perspective, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if that can gets kicked down the road another year or two. I hope that's not the case, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does. Because I know that there are a lot of PSAPs out there that, that have some pretty strong feelings. There's no doubt that SB 198 also SB 198 does not like dispatch centers. Okay, it just doesn't like dispatch centers. I don't know how many of you here run dispatch centers or are a part of them. If you're not a public safety answering point, there's no doubt you didn't get that 71 cents. I mean, it's gone. That only goes to PSAPs. And there is a law in place right now that says you cannot create another PSAP. So there's no doubt that the legislative intent of 198 and basically the general understanding of what the legislature is, they want to see consolidation, whether it's functional, whether it's physical. Consolidation is the movement they're moving towards. There are some places in Utah that do a really good job with that right now. You know, Salt Lake County, I think, is really a model. There's only 2 PSAPs in the state or in the county that serves over what? It was 1.3 million people that live in Salt Lake County today. You've got VEC and you've got Salt Lake City. That's really a model. You've got Weber, the Weber Area Dispatch that actually takes care of 2 counties. That's another model in the state that's doing very well. I hate to single anybody out because there are a lot of others that are doing well. But there are some counties in Utah that maybe there would be some consolidation efforts that might be better. I'm thinking of Utah County and I'm thinking of Davis County. There might be some possibilities to maybe do some more consolidation. But there's no doubt in my mind that all the backdoor meetings that I've been a part of and looking at the legislation that, you know, the dispatch centers are disfavored. There's no question about that.
I don't want to define that for some of those people.
Okay. A dispatch center is, take for instance, essentially they don't handle incoming 911 calls. Only a public safety answering point gets a 911 call directly to that center, okay? A dispatch center like the TOC is a dispatch center that only handles dispatching for UDOT, Highway Patrol. University of Utah has a dispatch center. Weber State, I think, has a dispatch center. Airport is a dispatch center. There's a number of them around the state, but there's no doubt that those folks are definitely disadvantaged, as a 198. And that probably will grow. And I know that that's a very controversial thing. I get it. But at the end of the day, we're focused on, I have tasked my 911 division with this. What is best for the 911 caller? That's what I want you to look at. What is best for them? And we don't like transfers. Transfers aren't good. If you've got somebody that's calling 911, that's a bad day. And they shouldn't have to be transferred. We had a case up in Davis County where there was a legislator that actually got transferred like 6 times when he was following a drunk driver. He was livid about it. And I understand that. There was a county manager up on the Wasatch Back that got transferred 2 or 3 times between PSAPs. And, you know, it's not an efficient system, and we'll never get to a point probably in the near future where there are no transfers. But to the extent that we can, we need to try to do better. We need to try to do better for the 911 caller, and that's what I've told them I want them to do. And we are in the process of promulgating best practices to that end with the 911 caller in mind, and I think we can all agree that that's what we should be talking about when it comes to 911 communications. So I hope I answered your question. We aren't quite there yet on making that determination.
Yeah, I'm hearing that you want to involve the PSAPs in that process, and I'm grateful for that. At any opportunity we can involve the PSAPs in those discussions about this or any of those other issues, just because I think that it we're going to come out with the best product if we include everybody, all the stakeholders in that process.
I agree. So. Thank you. Thank you for that.
Good discussion.
Yeah, great discussion.
Other comments or questions? Issues to raise or discuss?
All right. Well, I think you might have.
I was going to say, I have one more if we have time. I didn't want to keep everybody here or anything like that. But something that's important to our PSAPs, especially within our region, we have what we call split core 911 systems or regional systems where we have many, many PSAPs. In fact, every PSAP that's represented in this room, other than Tooele, I believe, is part of a regional system. And that was something that was definitely kind of brought to us by the legislature of incentivizing, hey, this is what we want to do, come together. Some of these systems have a lot of redundancy built in. They also are lower in cost overall because we're not buying as much hardware for that back room. One of maybe the unintended consequences or the side effects of that is that these systems require network connections between them. And by virtue of the system would not operate without these connections, without this network. Something that has kind of come back to hurt the PSAPs at the local level and by extension every single one of the departments that's in this room as well, since you're paying for them, we're all paying for them. These network costs have been put back onto the locals. It was not paid for at all by any of the grants from the 910 fund. And those were all excluded, but necessary costs. And to give you an idea, about 10% of what I get from the 71 cent fund goes straight back into network costs, paying out to CenturyLink or whomever is our network provider. So I guess from this region, if this is something that is important to us to try to convey to UCA, not only the division, but also perhaps the board, that if the legislature, if the board, if the 9-1 division is encouraging these sorts of projects, then to put that money for network costs, which is a very significant cost, back on the locals with no provision for providing some help or support for that is something that's difficult for us at the local level to be able to handle. It really hurts the budgets. And I know those decisions were made at the time by the previous board to exclude those costs, but I hope we can revisit that discussion as part of the broader 911 strategic plan, perhaps, of what the 9-cent fund is going to cover, whether the 9-cent fund is going to be need to be enhanced, do we need a new appropriation for these things. I just want to, I guess, convey the importance of that factor, because it's a lot of money that was put back onto the locals at the with these new phone systems.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually. And I should have mentioned this. We are in the process of right now working on the strategic plan for the 911 division. And once we get that strategic plan promulgated, we get it through and get it passed by our board, that's how we're going to be. The distribution of monies are going to be, they're going to coincide with that plan. They're going to be part of that. So it's very important that you have some say on what we put in that plan. It's very important that you have your chance to put input and talk about what you like, what you don't like. It's absolutely critical. And we are hoping to have something to our board by April on that. Before we even put it to our board, I know that there's a group of people that have been helping on that. There's going to be a bigger group of people that are going to be helping on that from the PSAPs to make sure that you do have your say on that. Because once it is promulgated, once it's approved by the board, that is really going to guide us on how we spend those monies. I wish there were more money there. The 9-cent fund only, it's about $3 million. After you take out, all of the ECATS, the software that we pay for out of that, and a few other things, and then our, just our division's costs, you're left with about roughly $2 million to disperse. And frankly, that's not a lot of money when you're talking statewide. It's not a huge amount. We have had some historical money that's been up sitting at the Division of Finance that we're trying to get so we can deal with a number of maintenance and upgrades that have come before our board already that we've had to we've had to kick down the road until we get further appropriations. The money is there, but it's not going to be there long term. It's not going to be in perpetuity. Right. Some of that's been up there in savings for because we haven't dispersed money from that in the last couple 3 years. But as we move forward, you're right. We're going to have to get creative. We're going to have to get some input on what the priorities are, because I think they've shifted a little bit. I get the sense that they've shifted. Historically, you know, yesterday's help becomes today's entitlement, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's often how things happen in government. And what the UCA was helping with, or any government entity for that matter, when it comes to grants, it becomes an annuity. It becomes something that it's expected all the time. And if that's the priority, that's great. That's a good thing. But I don't know if historical priorities are going to be the priorities in the future. As we move towards next generation 911, all the issues surrounding that. What does that mean? What are we going to need? What are we going to need to purchase, for instance? So I don't know. That's what the RFP is for. Excuse me, not the RFP, but the strategic plan. And we have the radio strategic plan that's been completed. It's done. We probably by April or May, we're going to have the 911 strategic plan completed. And then we've got the interoperability strategic plan that's going to be completed after that. And that will really set the stage for how we move forward throughout the next few decades here in the 21st century in Utah. So that'll be what we do.
And I fully appreciate what you're saying about limited funds. I get that. And I think we're to the point probably is in that particular fund is where we may not be able to look anymore at what can we do within the fund. We need to look at what do we ask for to expand that fund, because it's not enough. $3 million is not enough for, even if we realign priorities, even if we look at funding things to a lesser percentage, but we're still sharing that, there's not going to be enough going forward. And I guess that's what I'm trying to convey, is that there are these other things that are being foisted off perhaps on different groups, and we need to go back and look at the priorities for how that money is being spent long term.
We're about middle of the road. Utah, in that $1.32, we're about middle of the road. When you look at the United States of America, we're about middle of the pack. There are some states that are as high as like $8 a line, and I don't see us ever getting to that. The good news for Utah is it's growing. So every time you get a new cell phone here in Utah or a new landline, that money goes up. And we are one of the fastest growing states in the union. But anyway, Chief, did I cut you?
Well, no, you didn't. I was just going to build on what Carl said. Having Carl been involved in the 911 committee, and I was an initial member way back when they created a 911 committee, why would they create one on a state level? Why would they give funding to a committee to make decisions for the betterment of the state? Well, the underlying philosophy that I've always understood and tried to operate under is that because the advancements of technology were such that 20 years ago it didn't make sense, it wasn't even technologically possible for me to share a phone system with Carl. It wasn't financially advantageous, there was no backup redundancy advantages, but now with the technology, there's all these kind of operational advantages. And once again, your focus, going back to the 911 call, what's in their best interest, how does it best serve them? What I think is happening is that in all the meetings I've ever been in, is that what makes the most sense to buy on a regional or statewide basis, where economy of scale and where regional delivery makes sense for the 911 caller and strengthens the local 911 center. So the whole idea, and I believe this wholeheartedly having been in these discussions, the distribution of our funding, the 9 cents, the 71, so you have so much going local, so much going state. The philosophical undertone was, these are the kind of things the state should be responsible for, where the economy of scale, statewide, phone systems, those kind of things, it makes sense to buy them regionally or statewide, economy of scales kind of things, over this could be the demarcation of where then the local PSAP takes over. And I think that's what the heart of Carl's saying, is that the 911 centers have gotten together in regionalized phone systems, which have driven down some costs, enhanced some redundancy and interoperability, which is great for the state, our constituents. But if the distribution of allocation of the state 911 fund and or the local fund doesn't move with it in terms of responsibility, I think the strategic plan ought to focus on, this is what the state 911 committee should do, this is what local PSAP, and then let the funding, whether it goes up or down or increases, let it be the driving force of our recommendations to the UCA board and or to our legislatures to say, we're at $1.32 because of this. We should be at dollar whatever because of this data that supports that the state committee, 911, should take care of these responsibilities. The locals take care of this. So we're not into a situation where, I hate to bring out the ugly part of it, but Carl or any other 911 director or anyone else has to fight for this based on the fact that they're either losing or gaining money and how are they going to balance their budget. So they look at it myopically on their operation, which I totally understand and respect.
Sure.
But is it in the best interest of serving 911 throughout the entire state? And I think that's where the intent is that 9 cents was, at some point, someone decided that was what we felt was enough to take care of regional or statewide portions of 911 centers, and the local 71 cents was enough to do what it's been doing in the past. But it may not be hitting the mark. It may not be as scientific as we need it to be. And rather than just say, we want a campaign to get it raised to 11 cents for you because we just want to, because we only have 3 million and we think we need 3.5.
Right.
It should be based on, here's the cost for these responsibilities that we believe should be done at a statewide level. Mm-hmm. And we get out of, and I sit on a 911 committee, we would see all these phone systems come through and just buy them over and over again, and they'd want these backup centers, and we say, no, we can't afford them, and they'd want to maintain their autonomy, and we're saying, why don't we just buy 2 systems for the entire state? Mm-hmm. And then why don't we take care of them? Because they all have their own maintenance agreements, and we as taxpayers are all getting ripped off. We always thought there'd be an economy of scale by having one maintenance contract for all the centers in the state, all the phone systems in the state.
Right.
So we're working smarter. And all on behalf of the functionality of our centers, but also on the taxpayers. So we're spending the money and we're stretching it as far as we can. And I would hope that that's where the strategic plan is driven, not based on, I want this piece of the pie and you want that piece of the pie. If you want to take that piece of the pie, then you need the funding to support it.
Well, that's very well said. And to that end, we are looking at economy of scale opportunities for phone consoles, where we've been looking at this. We found it's a very complex issue, however, with networking. It's not as easy as we originally thought. In fact, the last few weeks, we've been buried on that issue. And we were originally going to bring something to our board even just next week, but I don't even know that we're going to be able to do that because we found the networking problems to be very problematic. But I will tell you this, I feel like that if UCA is negotiating, you know, for instance, phone consoles for all the PSAPs throughout the state, I feel like we're going to get a much better deal, you know? If you have to go negotiate 33 different contracts, you know, there's probably some fluff in some of those.
We saw it many a times. I'm not going to name a name, but they come in and they say, within this bid, these typical computer monitor, and they're $189 or $289 in the bid, and that Carl will come in and says, I can buy these locally for $102.
Yeah.
But the vendor's done the markup and everything else. So it's that kind of stuff that we need to eliminate to spend the money more wisely. So we're not in this such a grave situation over dollars.
Well, and I think you can make a compelling argument that for the vendor, it's a better deal. They don't have to negotiate 33 separate deals. They can negotiate one deal with UCA. I mean, again, they may not like that because there wouldn't be as much fluff in the contract. But
it's bigger.
Right. I mean, you know, you can make an argument that for them, you know, they know we're getting one check from one individual. I mean, you know, I don't know. At the end of the day, they may not love that. But I do think that we need to look at economy of scale opportunities and do a lot more of that. And we're planning on that. That we hope that that's part of the RFP, and we know that it will be. Our consultant has been very good so far. So
I would love to see, honestly, a couple statewide systems, 2 flavors of a statewide system operated by UCA. We don't all need blinky lights in our back rooms. We don't need the expensive server hardware. As long as the networking component can be met, and that's not going to kill us and bury us in cost, which it could if we're not careful. But I think that it's a very possible to see something like that coming down the road in a subscription-based model similar to what we did with radios for a long time. You've got 10 consoles in your center, well, you're going to pay $2,500 a month for each one of those. And if you want another one, you can buy one.
That's
so that sort of model, I think, is a something that I think would be really powerful in the state. I think it would benefit all of us and to be on some of those, you know, we already are today, but even more standardized, where we can have that that backup and redundancy across our region. Mm-hmm.
I believe that. The devil's always in the details, right? We don't want to go and dictate and tell you, look, you know, you can only have 20 consoles, you know, when, right. when you feel like you need 25. I mean, that's where we get into some of these really, you know, pretty ugly conversations. But, you know, I do believe that that's going to be part of this. We are working diligently to make it part of that. And, you know, we have seen in the past that when we negotiate deals at the state level, we do get a better deal. I mean, we have seen that. There's empirical data that drives this, so it's good.
Mr. Evans, are we all invited to the strategic planning that Melanie has sent out the invite? Are all of us invited to this, or just 911 centers?
Two per PSAP is what I understood they were asking.
That's my understanding, too, is it's two.
Sorry.
Thank you for doing that. Thank you, that's true.
So not everyone's going to be coming?
Well, I mean, two per PSAP is, I think, what she's asking for. And the reason why is because we're trying to, you know what happens when you get such a massive group out
Correct.
There? You know, we're trying to, we want everybody to have some input, but if we've got 100 people in the room, you know, everybody starts talking over everybody and it just degenerates into chaos.
But it's a PSAP only invite then?
Yes.
It's not, okay. Sorry,
that's what we're looking for. And okay. You know, actually, dispatch centers are invited to that as well. Mm-hmm. But we definitely want the PSAPs to be there.
So that'll be the venue in which Carl and I will talk about our specific.
Yes. And we are going to go on that road show, and we're going to have our consultant with us, and it's going to be great. We're looking forward to it. We're going to come, we're going to four different places around the state. So, yeah. Make sure that you're there. You're there, and you're armed with any questions that you've got. The consultant that we have, I've been very impressed. There's a woman that has done a lot of this on a national scale that's working as a sub. I think she just barely got hired by our consultant, who has a lot of knowledge of this stuff throughout the country. Very good.
Any other discussion on this item 5? If not, let me take a just briefly a little housekeeping. Would like to send a roll or attendance sheet around. The first page, just name an agency. The second page would be interested in having you write down your contact information that you're comfortable being posted on Utah's public notice website. That's one of the requirements of the Public and Open Meetings Act, is to have contact information. You can make that as generic or as specific as you prefer. So we'll send that around. Anything, did I miss anything there?
You were talking about who will do what.
Yeah.
Later.
Yeah. Great. As was mentioned earlier, I'm glad to hear we're on the same page in terms of this is your committee. You know, the Regional Council is the Association of Governments for Morgan, Tooele, Davis, Weber, and Salt Lake Counties. We're simply here to facilitate and help convene meetings. Sorry to say, Dave, that we are scheduled to move our office to downtown Salt Lake City.
Okay,
in the next few months, but
we can ride tracks.
Yeah, we can ride tracks out there. We'll be fine. We came out here because this is kind of a low rent district. You know, we're happy to be out here.
Yeah. So, and we've been here for 17 years, and it's there have been advantages.
You haven't had a lot of problems out here, or anything, have you?
Well, we've got these guys next door.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for us.
Keep an eye out.
Where are you going downtown?
North end of the Gateway.
Okay.
Well, good. You'll be part of the revitalization effort down at the Gateway. That's great.
There you go.
Is that where our future meetings will be held?
Well, and that would certainly be our preference, but if the group wants to rotate meeting locations or do a different location, we're open to that.
Did you have an idea of how often you would like us to meet, or?
And so the code says the requirement is that the regional advisory committees meet at least twice a year, and report at least once a year to the board. Not sure that has to be in person. I'm
Yeah, it's very ambiguous. It does not really define a lot of it.
Right,
it's kind of up to you.
Right. And so that report has to be made by September of each year,
I believe.
And so we'll leave that up to the group. Let me go to chair, vice chair, and secretary, and let's have that discussion briefly, and then we'll finish up with any other items you all have, and also talk about next meeting and how often you'd prefer to meet. From my limited perspective, role of the chair is to conduct meetings, lead in getting the agenda put together, and then also, as I think it was Dave mentioned, the chair, or Mike, or someone, the chair of this group is automatically on the Operations Advisory Committee and needs to serve in that role. Vice chair takes the chair's place when the chair is not available or any other duties the chair wants to assign the vice chair. Secretary responsible for distributing the agenda and preparing and distributing minutes, which can probably be pretty brief given that there's the requirement to record the meetings. And so that's my limited perspective. If you want to redefine those roles or anything, feel free. Any discussion on, I'd like to have some discussion on secretary role, if you're comfortable with one of this group taking that function. We're happy to post meeting notices, or if the secretary wants to do that, great. But you tell us how you'd like to operate.
I think that's a great idea to have your office assume the responsibility of secretary.
I don't know how everyone else feels, but
in terms of minutes and the scheduling and coordination and those kind of things, if you're willing to.
Yes.
That would be fine with me. I'd be glad to do that for you.
One related question to that. There's not a requirement that I'm aware of to post agendas and minutes on the WFRC website, but we'd be happy to do that if you'd like that in addition to the Utah's public notice website, or if there's a
There's certainly not an obligation for this group, because it's advisory in nature, to conform with all the OPMA standards. You don't have to do that. Now, if you choose to, that's fine. Okay. It's never wrong to do that, but you certainly are not statutorily required to conform with OPMA, because you're not making binding decisions like the board.
Right.
That's the difference.
Okay. And so, great. With that, let me open it up to nominations for chair, and go from there.
I nominate. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I'd like to nominate Mike.
Oh, that was going to be mine. You stole it.
Based on the conversations we've just had here today, very, very knowledgeable and a nice philosophy of what we're doing and where we're headed. So I'd like to nominate Mike for the position of chair.
Any other?
I'll second that.
And I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Kevin Burns.
And you are nominating Mike.
Matthew. It's spelled strange.
Yeah. And
Carl. Any other nominations for chair? All right.
Thanks.
Seeing none, we'll close nominations for chair, and do you prefer an anonymous vote, or do you want to just do by raising hand?
Perfectly comfortable holding my vote.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Sounds like Mike will be our chair.
The jury came and went.
I'll get that number back.
Why don't we go ahead and discuss term limits or length of service as chair? What's the group's preference?
8-9 years?
I mean, it's a big bus.
Given that membership on this committee has to be appointed by the chair of the regional council, the regional council chair serves a 2-year term. The current chair is in the middle of this 2-year term. I would probably recommend going with a 1-year or a 2-year term, but if the group wants to do something different, it's your decision.
I'll serve whatever you guys would like me to. I think there's going to be some getting our feet wet and getting used to what's going on in this first little bit. But I'll abstain from saying the amount of time, and I'll leave that up to you guys. But I'm happy to serve 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, whatever you'd like. But I think there's going to be some organizational mess this first year or two, and we might be warranted to have some continuity until we get this thing going. I guess I'm just trying to be
very good,
honest about it. I guess very good.
You've got 5 years till you retire, Mike. Yep. Is that okay?
Five.
I'm looking maybe at 4. It depends on the mayor. Unless he says I'm gone sooner.
For continuity, I don't know if you want to potentially think about a 1 year with the vice chair being a 1 year and kind of that assumption of the chairmanship for a year.
So have the chair be 2, a vice 1, and then have them both end up being 2 years so they stagger?
Yep.
You can do that?
Yep.
That makes a lot of sense.
Is the group comfortable with 2-year terms for both the chair and the vice chair? Or start the vice chair with 1 and then?
Was it the other, which, however, I guess it wouldn't really matter, but to stagger them opposite, or would you?
That won't work.
Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, you have to have them end at the same time. So either a 1-1 with the vice chair assuming the chairmanship, or a 2-2 with the same model, or something different. Just
we don't meet all that often, it sounds like. So probably like a 2-year and 2-year would seem reasonable to me.
Yeah, I think so. I'll take that as a decision. Sounds good. All right, nominations for vice chair.
I'd like to nominate Carl King for vice chair.
I have a comment about that, though. If the vice chair is filling in for the chair, I'm already on the operations advisory committee, so that probably wouldn't be the best use of our voting potential at the OAC.
And I didn't ask for, sorry, Carl.
I'm thinking of maximizing the voices on the OAC, so that would be a not smart thing to just combine it into 2 things. So
would you still miss a vote?
Yeah, I just couldn't miss the meeting.
Well, if the vice chair sends to the chair in a couple of years, that would decrease our
margin. What's your commitment on that? No, it doesn't matter.
For me, it's a 4-year commitment as a representative of the PSAPs.
Could we re-vote in 2 years? I mean, I'll say this because you seem to have a pretty good concept of what's going on as well as he does. Where a lot of us are coming in really cold and don't have much background in it.
I don't mind. I'm fine to serve. I just wanted to throw that out there so you were all aware of it. So.
With him having the background as the chair of the 911, committee in the past, I think he'd be a good fit, but I wouldn't want to waste a vote either or waste resource. But I think behind Mike, he's the best for the knowledge that all the history that you two have is the way I see it. And so my recommendation is still there then, I guess, to have, I don't know.
I agree with what Brian said. We wouldn't automatically put you back in his chair, we could vote again in 2 years.
Okay.
And if it's appropriate, then we'll either vote change or put somebody else in his chair.
No problem.
Just don't.
And by then, we'll all be more up to speed on the committee.
Yeah.
So maybe just not make it automatic succession. Right. Just say it's 2 year terms for each, and then we'll have to vote the two new ones in, and we can address that at the time.
Sure. My other group might kick me out. You never know.
Right.
You know, it's a backup and redundancy for
other members
our redundancy.
Want to serve as well as they should.
But with that, I'll second Carl's nomination.
Thank you.
Great. So, any other nominations for vice chair? Hearing none, all in favor of Carl serving as vice chair?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So, we'll go with Mike as chair, Carl as vice chair, and for 2 year terms, and vice chair will not automatically become chair. Anything else on that item that we need to discuss? Anything else you want us to make sure we...
Do you want a secretary for your group? That actual role? Or, because I could just be administrative support to a secretary. If I don't have to post everything.
No, you certainly don't. I mean, this group can decide to do that. You can.
I, public transparency, you know, nobody's discussing anything that the public shouldn't hear anyway.
Right.
And I think the more you put it out there, the better it looks. And so if you would like me to take the administrative role rather than just a secretarial part of your committee, I can still do that, and then I'd work with the secretary. I don't know if there's any functions that a secretary would serve.
Right. Well, we're not holding any. We don't have money to deal with.
Right.
We don't have treasury issues. We don't have. But we're all full time somewhere, and it would be great to have. And now speaking as a future chair and with the vice chair, to have a secretary that helps coordinate agenda items, things like that, and just getting our meetings set. If we have to adjust the meeting and so forth, sending out all the information to all of us, it'd be great to have one centralized person to do that.
I'll be glad to do that. It's more of an administrative role than as a secretary.
Yes.
Than a secretary.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
And what's your name?
I am Andrea Pearson.
Andrea.
I've been the one deluging you with all of the emails. And I, you know, have some real fancy business cards that I've only used about 6 of in 2 years. So if you want to stop by my desk, you'll have to
steal.
My contact information will be on every email as well. And am I to understand that you would like a little summary of the meetings and have them posted? And
right, have them posted out there for anybody to see. And we'll ask you to manage our Twitter account, Facebook page. And
Twitter account, I don't even.
We're going to have a Facebook live stream for the next meeting.
If Wasatch Front Regional Council would so oblige, if that's okay with her.
Yes, so that's fine. Do you want this information also hosted on our website?
I think so.
It's an appropriate place for it, I think.
Okay, so it'll be on the Utah Public Notice website and our website with their own area. Yeah. Since you're
We're appointed
to represent you, so that'll be
okay. Let me make sure I got everything covered. So that's all the administrative stuff I need.
Great. Thank you. Very much. How many times, or if you want to decide this now, great. If you don't want to set it in stone, fine. But let's at least choose next meeting and maybe have some discussion about just briefly on how many times you want to meet.
Is it on six or like every couple months?
Every other month.
I think initially we need to get up to speed and know exactly what we're going to do and things like that. But then again, I don't want to set a meeting just to set it until it gets going.
Yeah, there may be a varying separation. You know, as we get closer to a legislative season, we may have two or three in a row or something like that, if we wanted to bring certain items up.
I think as UCA develops some of their issues with related to the strategic plan, the RFP, those kind of things, we want to bring everybody up to speed so we know how it reflects and affects us. But maybe we do every other month until we determine if we need to do more. But obviously we have to, if we follow the statute, we have to do some type of report to the board, the UCA board, by September.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's just one time. I think it's once a year.
So maybe if we had a couple more meetings before that, then at least if we're the first regional council, we have a couple of things to chew on, and maybe Carl and I can get together with Andrew and come up with some agenda items to talk about and get with Dave. Because I think the first couple is almost more information delivery, size up, informing everybody of where we're all at, and then I think as representatives here, we would want to ask our folks in our areas, because we're representing the whole Wasatch Front, that, you know, what are our issues related to radio network issues? What are our issues related to 911? What should we be aware of? So we can maybe be a true representative of the area we serve.
Yes.
And then I would think that anybody wants to put anything on the agenda, just call Andrew and say, I want to talk about this. And we also, I think another important piece is that this RAC has a vendor on here, and a lot of people know John Tate, and I know there's some issues related to the fact that they're our current radio provider, and then through the RFP process, we have to maintain that independence, and like they've stated. But at the same time, I think such a vast amount of institutional and experiential knowledge that John brings to the table is going to be beneficial to us, too, to help maybe explain some of the technology issues and things we may not completely understand about the technology. So, I mean, we may even want to open it up to give John some time to educate us on some things.
That could be scary too, John.
That could be scary, buddy.
Yeah.
1 hour, John.
Well, I think what's important is, as Senator Hubbard put it, vendors on these committees for a reason, so they are part of the process.
They should be.
So they know the issues that we're really running into.
So 2 months from now?
The second Thursday in April is the 12th.
Okay, 12th of April. Same time, same place still, or are we going to still be here with us? Okay.
April 12th, 1:30.
Carl and I will work on some agenda items for the next meeting and get that out at least a week or two before. And if any of you have something, you get a hold of one of us, or at least
set out a meeting before the meeting.
I'm sorry?
You'll set out a meeting notice?
I will. Yeah, I'll put them on the calendar. Put it on.
You want us to come to you or to Andrea for agenda items?
I would like you to send it to both Carl and Andrea, just so we're aware of it.
Sure.
And if we need to talk or prepare, help you with it beforehand.
Okay.
And so, I'd be glad to send out the contact information. I mean, you probably all have each other's. Never mind, you have each other's.
I think
emails.
It's going to be nice because not everyone has everybody else's. So
okay.
I'd say 7 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, great. I can do that.
Because I think we're going to probably be hopefully the model RAC using for the rest of the state to
absolutely
work off
end of the day.
Hopefully.
With you at the helm, we will be.
Oh, no. I mean, we've got some Wasatch Front issues to be able to solve.
That's true.
To help work through.
For sure.
Not a one in Tooele.
No, you're all set.
Smooth sailing. You got all the money you need.
You're great.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all moved to Tooele.
I forgot about when we had CSAP money. That's too far back.
I know. That's
yeah, it was too long ago. I'm funny. Yeah. We don't remember that.
Yeah.
We're poor now.
Yeah. You're living like the rest of us.
Right.
Okay, anything else from anybody? Motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Okay, second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. See you next meeting. Thanks for coming.
Who was the second? I'm sorry. Carl.
Both of us were.
Right. Second, third, fourth.
Pick one.
All right.
Pick one, anyone.
Thank you.